Radio Prague News. 60 people are hospitalized with a salmonella infection in western Bohemia. Around 100 miners from North Bohemia demonstrated outside the Czech government building on Monday, calling for the lifting of coal mining limits in the region. And the internationally renowned concert pianist Ivan Moravec has died at the age of 84. 60 people remain hospitalized in connection with a salmonella epidemic in western Bohemia that broke out over the weekend. 130 people were treated for severe stomach pains, diarrhea and fever. Hygiene officers traced the infection to a Plzeň food company that delivered 140 portions of spaghetti alla carbonara to several companies in the region. The authorities managed to obtain one of the portions and warned that a limited number could still be in storage since their use-by date has not expired. The firm's employees have all undergone tests. The results should be available on Wednesday. Around 100 miners from North Bohemia, mainly from the company Severní Energetická, staged a protest outside the Czech government building on Monday, calling for the lifting of coal mining limits in the region. Mining limits in North Bohemia were introduced in 1991 as a guarantee for municipalities situated on coal deposits that they would not be pulled down to enable further mining. The question is now being revised by the government in view of its long-term energy strategy. The Czech Industry and Trade Ministry has commissioned an independent study to find out if the lifting of coal mining limits would pay off. The Foreign Police is reported to have detained 91 illegal migrants over the past weekend, the highest number registered in the course of a weekend since the migrant crisis started. In the first 6 months of this year, the police detained just over 3,000 illegal migrants, a 50% increase on the same period last year. The vast majority are from Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq and Pakistan. The Czech government recently approved a plan to take in 1,500 foreign migrants in the course of the next 2 years. Approximately 1,100 of them would be from countries currently bearing the brunt of the migration wave, and around 400 would be from refugee camps in the Middle East. The regional court in Ústí nad Labem has sent a man to 22 years in jail for the rape and murder of a young woman. As a repeat offender, he was also ordered to undergo therapy and should remain under observation. The man was detained and convicted thanks to the biggest blanket DNA screening ever undertaken in the Czech Republic. It involved 1,500 men aged between 25 and 35 years. The internationally acclaimed Czech concert pianist Ivan Moravec has died at the age of 84. Moravec, who studied at the Prague Academy of Music and later with Italian masters, captivated audiences in New York, Paris, London, Berlin, Prague and Milan. In October of 2000, President Václav Havel awarded the pianist the Medal of Merit for Outstanding Artistic Achievement. In January of 2002, he was honored with a Cannes Classical Award for Lifetime Achievement, an award given by several international music magazines, and he appears on a CD of the piano greats of the 20th century. And finally, a look at the weather forecast. Last week's heat wave has given way to more moderate weather conditions, with partly cloudy skies, scattered showers and day temperatures reaching just 24 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarova, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Chris Johnston. Coming up in today's programme, we look at the problems posed by perfect replica pellet guns, and we've a roundup of the latest sports news. And in one-on-one, singer Lenka Lichtenberg discusses a fascinating project in which she recorded in Czech synagogues, some in total disrepair. All that coming up, so please stay with us. A proposed amendment on the possession of firearms in the Czech Republic will not require consumers to register airsoft pistols or rifles in the near future. Some had hoped the sale of airsoft guns, which are often almost perfect replicas of existing weapons, should also be regulated, not least given how often they're used in armed robberies. Jan Wellinger has the details.
An airsoft pistol, if used properly, should not prove dangerous or put anyone at risk. Still, the possibility of injury can never be ruled out. In its report on Sunday, public broadcaster Czech TV referred to a YouTube video to show how a BB, the small 6mm pellet fired in air guns, penetrated two tin cans at short range. In another case in which an airsoft was apparently misused, the pellet penetrated a young man's upper lip.
No, pojde, pojde.
Ondřej Dušek is an armorer and shooting instructor for the Czech Army.
Mohlo by dojít eventuálně i k úmrtí, když je to velmi málo pravděpodobný, ale i ta ztráta zraku je samozřejmě.
Even an accidental death cannot be ruled out, although that is very, very unlikely. But you wouldn't want to lose an eye either.
Ale i ta ztráta zraku je samozřejmě.
Unlike the holders of real firearms, airsoft buyers in the Czech Republic are not required to register their gun. By contrast, Slovakia's government tightened restrictions just recently. There, law enforcement should be able to keep a better track of who owns not only regular firearms but airsoft pistols. Motivation for such a step in the Czech Republic could be how often near-perfect replicas are used in bank or gas station holdups. While airsoft guns ship out with an orange tip on the muzzle to differentiate them from the real thing, anyone wishing to remove that can do so without much difficulty, making possible the replica's use in real crimes. What makes them even more convincing? Airsofts are weighted by manufacturers to appear and even feel as close to the real thing as possible. An airsoft pistol, meanwhile, can be bought for just 3,000 crowns. All one needs is ID showing the age of at least 18. Armorer Ondřej Dušek again.
You basically cannot tell the difference between replicas and firearms which use bullets.
According to Czech TV, police in the East Bohemian town of Hradec Králové estimate that airsoft replicas are used in 9 of 10 holdups in the region. Of course, the law does not differentiate between real guns and fakes in armed robberies. Asked about one local gas station holdup, police spokesman Jan Čiškovský said this.
Even though the weapon he used was an airsoft, the perpetrator faces up to 10 years in jail.
He repeated that the use of airsoft guns in holdups is fairly common, given how easy it is to acquire near-perfect replicas. Experts say that is unlikely to change.
Jan Wellinger on the problems with those pellet guns. Now I'm joined in the studio by Ian Willoughby for the latest sports news.
We begin today with football, and the Czech Republic have drawn Germany, Norway, Northern Ireland, Azerbaijan, and San Marino in their qualification group for the 2018 World Cup in Russia. The Czechs' campaign will begin with a home tie against Northern Ireland in September next year. But the greatest interest will surely be in their games against Germany, who are defending champions. Czech manager Pavel Vrba says the Germans are clear favourites to top the group, and his team will likely be battling with Norway and Northern Ireland for second spot.
The group is, of course, difficult, but we will definitely fight for second place and a place in the playoffs. And perhaps we will cause a few surprises in some games. But still, the group isn't that bad. I had a much worse feeling after the draw for Euro 2016. We'll see how it goes, but I hope we come at least second.
The new season in the Czech top division got underway at the weekend, with defending champions Viktoria Plzeň carrying on where they left off with an impressive 2-1 home win over Slavia Prague. Elsewhere, Plzeň's likely main challengers, Sparta Prague, could only manage a nil-all away draw with Jihlava. The highest scoring match of the opening round was Slovácko's 4-3 win over Dukla Prague, with veteran striker Libor Došek getting the first hat-trick of the season for the victors. Meanwhile, the Plzeň and Sparta squads spent Sunday night in the same hotel by Prague Airport. Pilsen have flown to Israel to face Maccabi Tel Aviv in the Champions League third qualifying round, while Sparta are now in Moscow for an analogous clash with CSKA. The return legs are on Wednesday next week. Cycling and Leopold Koenig has become the first Czech in a decade to feature in the team of the winner of the Tour de France. He helped Team Sky's Chris Froome to victory a year after he himself finished seventh in the world's most famous race. Koenig said being part of the team accompanying the winner into Paris was a different feeling from his own breakthrough success in 2014, but that both were wonderful. Roman Kreuziger of the Tinkoff Saxo team achieved the best individual placing among the Czech riders, coming 17th, and the best stage result for a Czech was the 6th, notched up by Zdeněk Štybar of Etics. Finally, athletics and Zuzana Hejnová came first in the women's 400 metres hurdles at a Diamond League meeting in London on Friday night. The Czech's success came 3 weeks after she topped the podium in Paris and means that she's second overall in the Diamond League behind Kali Spencer of Jamaica. Hejnová's compatriot, Barbara Špotáková, was less fortunate in the British capital. The world record holder achieved her best throw of the season in the javelin with 65 metres, only to see the Latvian Madara Palamika beat her by 1 centimetre. That's all the sports news for today.
If you've any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be extremely glad to hear from you. Now, last week, singer Lenka Lichtenberg recalled her days as a child star in Prague and learning she was Jewish at the age of 10. In the second part of this interview, she explains that her mother had not known about her Jewish heritage as a child, and also describes a fascinating project in which she recorded in synagogues around the Czech Republic. That's in this edition of One on One with Ian Willoughby.
Singer Lenka Lichtenberg was born in Prague, where she was a child star with the Semaphore Theatre in the 1960s. Several years after her emigration to Canada, and well into her career as a singer, she began performing songs in Yiddish. When I asked her whether she'd known the language in her young days, it sparked a fascinating discussion about the parallel experiences of the singer and her mother, who, like Lenka Lichtenberg, was unaware of her Jewish background when she was very young.
Mom, even though being, I guess you could say, 100% Jewish by blood, she was by no means Jewish by culture or upbringing. She actually, how history repeats itself, she didn't know. I just read that in her book. She didn't know she was Jewish until 1939, at which time she was 12, because her parents brought her up as a Catholic. So she didn't know, and I didn't know. So like, it's interesting how that... So she was brought up as a Catholic, in fact, was very devoted Catholic, and loved going to church, and had a confirmation, the whole bit. And she was only told about being Jewish because they just passed the Nuremberg Laws, and she had to stop going to school, and all sorts of things happened, and her parents had to explain it to her why that was. And so all of a sudden she was an outcast and had no idea why. So her relationship to her Jewishness was problematic at best. And then having lost everybody after that and actually never really feeling Jewish, you know, like in Terezin, where she spent 2.5 years in the concentration camp, and she's surrounded by many Jews who actually were Jewish in terms of having lived it, and she had no idea what that was all about, none. And when she came back, she still didn't know what it was about and had actually no interest to find out. And I have to say, it's kind of a strange thing that I think she became more aware and more educated and more Jewish because of me. Because together we were all both drifting from all of that past and doing something completely different. And then when I decided to become a Jewish, a Yiddish singer, Yiddish singer, which I had no knowledge of before. I came to that, and at the time she visited me in Toronto, and I told her, you know, I'm going to drop all this popular music, all of those things. I'm going to be now a Yiddish singer. I don't know how, but I will. So I started taking lessons. I started listening to Yiddish songs. And she thought that it was actually preposterous. She said, why on earth would you want to do that? I mean, this is something that was left in our family five generations ago, and good riddance, you know. We were perfectly assimilated, perfectly civilized Europeans, and like, why would you bother with Yiddish? And I thought that was really ignorant on her part. So we actually had a major fight over that. And she had reasons, all sorts, such as it's a dead language, so, you know, learn something else, sing in French. So that was really not understood or welcome by her. And it took a long time, I have to say, at least 10, 15 years before she saw that I meant it and I was not some sort of a pretender, that it was coming from deep and that I really wanted to undo some of the damage that was done, perhaps through the Holocaust, at least to what was going on immediately around me and the family and so on, and that that was my kind of a mission. So that's what I wanted to do. And she saw that I was genuine about it and somewhat accepted it. I don't think she was still thrilled with it. She still doesn't get it, I think. But yeah, anyway.
Tell us about your project, Songs for the Breathing Walls, which you began at the start of this decade.
Yes. Now, that's an amazing project, maybe the biggest one in my life. So it started with the Yiddish songs, and then I also felt that, okay, so this is one thing. Now, I'm married to a very Jewish man of the Iraqi background, and he goes to synagogue on high holidays, not otherwise. And his family was observant on high holidays, not otherwise. So I was supposed to now know about all those things. And I'm an ADD person, so I get very scattered. But if I go into something, I go very deep. So I started finding out about it, and I got really very caught up in the traditional and the ritual and the liturgy aspect of the religion, especially the music, because to me everything goes through music.
But how did you hit on the idea of recording in the synagogues here in Bohemia?
I'll get there in one second, but you'll have to understand why.
So
the why is that once I started going with him to synagogue, it was a traditional one, and I was not allowed to open my mouth because women can't sing. So then I was looking for somewhere where I can use my voice, which is my greatest gift. So I found a very progressive synagogue congregation, which is 100% egalitarian, woman rabbi, woman cantor, woman. So I started singing with them. And through that, I was leading services eventually, all that. And I learned liturgy. So that's now I'm getting to this. So now I have a whole new material, which is in Hebrew, these beautiful texts and melodies, which I suddenly felt like I should be writing to, the melodies. So I started writing new liturgy and learning new liturgy. So that's how the music came. And then in 2000, I think 10 or something like that, I had concerts here, which happened to be in two synagogues, which were very, very different, vintage and different character, different sound, different everything. And I felt one was Plzeň, one was Liberec. I felt, wouldn't it be wonderful to try to capture the difference in a sonic way, because I believe this is something that goes way beyond acoustics. It's something that has something to do with the place and what happened in the place and the people that worship there.
There's some kind of resonance.
A resonance that's human. It's not just the architecture. And so I had this idea that I will try to capture it through recording in each synagogue that I will find, recording a piece of liturgy, which would be the texts that were somewhere way back recited or chanted or sung in those places. So it's like bringing back the text with a little bit different music, that's okay, but connecting through that, which was the common, with the reality of that place. And I just got completely smitten by that idea, and I presented it to my friend at the Jewish Federation here in Prague, and he can I say, opened the doors for me. He arranged that I could go and record in these synagogues, even though most of them were not renovated. So I went there with different combinations of musicians, some only one, two, or three, or just by myself, and did these recordings. And I really believe, as I think you will, if you hear it, that each place has something very different about it, not only because of the song, but because of what's behind it. And so that is a very special thing. And then when I put it out, I researched the communities for each of the synagogues. So it is in the booklet, you will see it's a connection between the community, the synagogue, and the text. It's those two. So like, I'm not there. It's these two coming together.
I was reading that you went to one synagogue that was in such a bad state that you couldn't perform.
Yes. I mean, it's hard to believe. I couldn't master
it?
my voice.
Where was it?
Yeah. Well, actually, it happened to me twice. One of them I just couldn't overcome at all, and that was here in Libeň, I think. It's
another Libeň. One, just by the corner.
Maybe it's better now.
By the crossroads where the trams go in Palmavka.
The place was just in such a disaster. There was like bottles of beer, there was dirt, there was paint, there was this, there was some exhibition in there which made no sense. Like, it was just so far gone. I felt the place was so sad that for me to connect with the walls, I'd really have to dig 10 meters deep somewhere, and I'd probably still not find it. And I was trying to find it. I was touching the walls. I said, okay, speak to me. Really, it sounds crazy, but like, I couldn't touch it. The soul was not there, or it was too sad. So nothing was recorded there. And another one that was extremely depressed and depressing was in Brandis. That turned out amazingly, because at first I couldn't find it. It's a building that had three levels, and they told me, okay, so it's up there. So I went to the top of the building, and I'm singing, and again, it's just like nothing there. I'm saying, like, what the heck is this? Like, I feel nothing, and clearly the place has something, but I can't find it. So I'm walking around, and I find this old man who tells me, no, that's not how it used to be. These three floors were put in there by communists who used it for storage. So they were just trying to create more footage. And the congregation and everything was happening down what's now the basement. And that's where they stood. That's where the altar of the Bima, where it was. So I went down there, and it was this black hole, literally. Everything black. But I felt it. And so we recorded our saddest song of the whole thing, which actually is the first one on the CD. And it's incredible because you're really connecting with this. Meanwhile, they have renovated Brandeis, and apparently it's white, beautiful. They took out all these separations, and it's back to beauty.
Lenka Lichtenberg there talking to Ian Willoughby. But for me, Chris Johnston, that's all for now. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.